I know, Vern, you have a birthday today to celebrate.
Yes.
Yes, happy birthday, Lana.
A happy birthday.
No, not mine, my wife's. I better be back for that.
Well, Ben's birthday.
Yeah, mine, I don't care.
Right.
The next council meeting is going to be our anniversary, I think. But,
so we're going to go through that one quick, too.
Well, Debbie, I think without further ado, let us get started with the Tuesday, June 16th Finance Committee meeting. Debbie, will you please call the roll?
Grindel?
Here.
Sinek?
Here.
Viverka?
Here.
And very simply, as you know, our agenda just is one topic, and it's discussion of city debt. And it's a very important topic, especially in our volatile world that we live in today. We're getting I wouldn't say a head start, but we're getting a pretty good start on this. We're looking at legislation to be introduced in July on first reading, kept on first reading. We'll discuss this further, and then hopefully approved in August. And we have Matt is here, who, you know, the veterans that have gone on kind of have worked very much with Matt Straczynski for a number of years, but especially last year intensely, we had a number of meetings where they go between bands and bonds. So I'm going to get the discussion started with having Vern give us a little introduction.
Well, you always give the greatest introductions, Vice Mayor, because it just makes transitioning to what I'm going to say so much easier. And thanks to the three committee members and Kathleen for you attending online, and Mayor. It's an important decision. We have the $17.375 million worth of bands, the one-year notes, that they don't mature until early December. So we're doing really good here as far as attacking this issue now. In June, and the reason we're doing that is the market has exhibited some really ups, turbulence and ups and downs the last couple of months, and that's why we have Matt here. And I'm just going to speak for a few minutes, and then Matt will present some stuff, and then we'll just engage in a discussion from there. And the question is, in the past couple of years with these bands, the MO has been always pretty much to renew them on a one-year basis continuously. And that certainly is an option, a viable option here this year in 2020 based on the current interest rate market for short-term notes, let's call them. But the long-term bond interest rate market is equally as attractive, not as low of rates because it's long-term, but long-term rates are at levels that, just if you've read any of the weekly correspondence I've sent out to you, they're at levels that get your attention as well. There's Councilman Trinkus coming in, so welcome, Councilman Trinkus, if you could hear us. Looks like he's still connecting, but I could see him. So what we wanted to do was here in June introduce the topic again. Those of you that served on council last year, you remember some presentations from Matt and the decision process that went through that. Vice Mayor outlined it. If we could walk away from this meeting today with some direction, we even don't need pinpoint decisions from this body collectively today, because what we're going to ask from you at the end, by the end of the meeting, is for a little bit of flexibility, so that when it comes time for us to have to, I'll use the word, pull the trigger on refinancing this debt later this year, that we can make the best decision for the city based on what the short-term market is versus the long-term market at that time. And they could be the same as they are today. One could be better, one could be worse. And it's changing by the day, changing by the week. We know how world circumstances have changed tremendously this year, from COVID-19 to the Minnesota police incident and oil. All these incidences have impacts on the debt market. And we are in the debt market because we have over $17 million worth of one-year notes that expire or mature later this year. So that's a little introduction. I'll turn it over to financial advisor Matt. All of you, I think, that are on served last year except for Councilman Sinek. So I don't know if you know Matt at all or not, but if you don't, Matt Stasinski's just, oh, there, you could barely see him there on the camera on the side, and it's more important to hear what he says, and that works. So, Matt, the floor is yours.
Well, good afternoon. Certainly delighted to be sitting amongst the representatives from the city. It feels good to be back in the council or a caucus room, as opposed to sitting in my office. So thank you for indulging me and allowing me to join you folks. I did send to Director Blaze a handout, which is we'll call it a modified version of what we reviewed last year in July. I pared it down from 10 pages down to 5, just to show you some of the bullets of content that we discussed last year as it relates to bonds versus bans. I have no intentions of going through 5 pages worth of bullets, okay? But of course, any content that you would like to review, revisit, go in more detail, I'm happy to discuss. As Director Blaze mentioned, what we're tasked with doing is preparing or strategizing a plan that we need to develop between now and when those notes mature December 3rd of 2020. And as suggested, that can be in the form of rolling over bands for the entire amount, issuing bonds for the entire amount of notes that are outstanding, or some hybrid combination of the two, issuing bonds and bands. Thank you very much for starting early, as Director Blaze mentioned, with the disruption in the marketplace. While things have settled down in some places and in some areas of the market, they still remain somewhat disrupted in other areas of the market. But for the most part, as it concerns us today, one-year bond anticipation notes are being well received by the marketplace. Rates have, where they in February were at less than 1%, slightly less than 1%. And then through the course of March and April, spiked to over 2.5%. Again, this is for one-year note rates. Are now in the course of those couple, we'll call it a handful of weeks since the beginning of May, rates have come down considerably on one-year notes and now are below 0.5%. We've seen good execution of one-year notes in the 435 to 45 basis point range for a variety of different issuers. So we are in a very healthy, for the time being, one-year note rate environment. As it relates to bonds, bonds went through the same, we'll call it, dynamic, in as much as general obligation bonds, which of course that's what we're discussing here today, is general obligation debt. So we're at their all-time lows going into the end of February. They retreated in terms of higher interest rates through the course of March and April and have settled back down into a very comfortable low interest rate range. For a 20-year, highly rated general obligation, we are seeing rates, we'll call it just slightly under or right around 2% for a 20-year borrowing, which is very attractive for a long-term borrowing plan. So when we think about the notes that are coming up for renewal, and we talked about this last year, that by way of this outstanding debt being in the form of a one-year note, City Council, the administration have the luxury of making a decision each year as to what they plan to do with the notes that are coming due. And as we talked about, can stay in the form of notes, convert to bonds, or do some hybrid of that game plan. What we have done since last year to this year is really sit down with the finance department and walk through a cash flow of what the TIF revenue is. And again, this is all general obligation debt, but as a reminder, when the debt was issued in the form of bands, there was an intention, and the intention was to repay this debt with tax increment finance revenue. What we've done since, like I said, last year was to sit down and put pencil to paper as to what that cash flow looks like in terms of how much TIF revenue are we receiving annually, what is currently dedicated to long-term bonds that are already outstanding, and how long those are outstanding, what that cash flow looks like. What then remains available to service the debt on a go-forward basis, that debt meaning the $17 million and how that one might be structured if it were done in the form of short-term notes or long-term bonds. Taking a step back to last year, when the 2020 budget was created, there was at least a game plan that was established back in 2020 to spend about $2 million this year retiring the $17 million worth of notes. That's a combination of TIF revenue and general obligation revenue, or we'll call it general revenue, that was going to be set aside to retire approximately $2 million worth of notes this year, therein reducing the outstanding notes from $17,375,000 to just over $15 million. That's not cast in stone, but that was done, we'll call it, on a preliminary basis 6 months ago. So that can always, of course, be revisited and reassessed as to whether or not that's still a game plan for this year. I'm going to take a second here and just stop and ask the mayor if the mayor has any comment. Again, we've had a brief conversation on this with the mayor. And mayor, this is an opportunity, I suppose, for you to weigh in as to what your preferences are or what your, we'll call, thought process are as to a strategy.
What we talked about earlier was watching, I think the finance director alluded to a dual-pronged process, giving us authority to look at a combination of bands and bonds, depending on what the market, how the market develops or redevelops or over the next several months. And I'm more of the volition of, if we can go sub 2% for the 15 million for 20 years, it's a fixed amount, it's easy. And we know that we can absorb that as well as our general obligation debt through our TIF, projected TIF financing. So it's a strategy, but it's going to develop over time because of some of these volatile markets.
Thank you, Mayor. If I can go back just for a quick second to the cash flow analysis that we did, and I'll paint this in broad strokes. If you think about the city's TIF revenue, and as it's been modeled, annual TIF revenue, generally speaking, is in the range of $2.1 million to $2.2 million. Of course, that assumes no one appeals their value, that is going to stay consistent on a go-forward basis. And that would increase annually based upon some of the new projects that have been part of the infrastructure that's going in, and that being, of course, Topgolf and Vista Springs and Home Suite. And those projects should add additional incremental TIF revenue to the left side of the equation, the revenue side. Current outstanding debt, general obligation debt, that's intended to be paid back with TIF revenue, is roughly about $950,000 annually for the next 10 or so years. So you've already committed out of that $2.1 million to $2.2 million, you have an obligation to pay that general obligation bonds currently outstanding of approximately just under $1 million. That gives you about $1 million to $1.1 million, $1.2 million on the high end available to retire the $17 million currently outstanding, but after paid down this year, somewhere between $15 and $16 million. Okay? If the city were to issue bonds for all of the outstanding, and let's say after pay down, let's just say that's roughly $15 million worth of bonds, and if we were to be issued at with a 20-year amortization, roughly 2.5%, just for conservatively high estimates, that would require approximately $1 million in annual debt service. Thereby, and that would come from the TIF revenues that's in excess after you paid off the old bonds. That's what would be remaining to pay off the potential new series of bonds if the city decided to go to bonds for all the $15 to $16 million of outstanding. That gives you a little bit of wiggle room. It's not a very good financial term, but it gives you a little bit of capacity, if you will, with the excess revenue. Should there be some disruption by way of either collection of the TIF revenue or a, we'll call it a challenge to value, and if that TIF revenue doesn't come in as expected or should decline slightly, you still have some room within the existing projected revenue stream to issue and cover the current outstanding debt and the, a projected bond service, projected debt service for a 20-year bond structure with a little bit left over. I just want to kind of frame the cash flows that we evaluated. And as I said, locking in 20 years at roughly 2% was more or less how we modeled that. We know that rates are being are in good position now, but as we've seen over the last two or three months, that can change dynamically and dramatically the wrong direction as quickly as it's come to our benefit in the right direction. So we're trying to leave as much flexibility as we progress and get closer to this note, to this we'll call maturity of this note. And we've asked, at least, and this has been done in other cities, that council entertain the notion of having two pieces of legislation. One that would consider a bond structure with a not to exceed amount for all of it, and one that would consider a note structure with a not to exceed amount for all of it. Therein giving the city maximum flexibility should one of those options not be available to you as we get closer to the maturity date or to the strategy of issuing bonds or notes. I think the temperate, we'll call it the predisposition, or we'll call it the disposition, coming out of a conversation that we've had briefly, is bonds are seem like a very logical and straightforward strategy with rates being as low as they are. But should there be some disruption and you can't go to the bond market for whatever reason, either as a result of their lack of buy side or rates all of a sudden moving higher, it would be helpful to have in place legislation that allows you the luxury of renewing those notes and then converting to bonds at some future point in time. You want to have the benefit of maximum flexibility in this environment. So you would, if you choose one path and don't use the other, you rescind the legislation, or it dies of a sunset. So and there, many cities have entertained that strategy so that if some disruption occurs, they have the luxury of one path or another. And with that, I'm going to stop and see if there's other questions.
Yeah, let's see if anybody, if you've been able to digest what you've heard either from Matt, Vice Mayor, the Mayor, or myself, and if you have any questions or any knee-jerk responses, and then we could talk from there. All right, besides Jim Trickus's cat walking through, that was nice.
No, I would say, I like the idea of the flexibility. I like the idea of being able to say, this is what maybe looks good now, but we have to go another route. We would have that ready.
And of course, just like we did last year, we would come back to council and provide guidance as to what the strategy currently looks like and what the market rate, market environment looks like. And this would be the path that we'd like to proceed, always knowing that we have to communicate back to you the path is, if the pathway is still consistent with the original planning, or whether or not there's been some disruption to it.
And one thing Matt did throw out for our consideration, even though the bans don't expire until December 3rd, we could say refinance those up to 90 days before that. So that's early September, and that's the closing date, correct? So in a, we feasibly the city could sell notes or bonds to take those bans out late August. And one advantage of doing that at the time, if the market is still very favorable for one decision or the other, is it's before the election. And this year we did, Matt and I did a competitive sale, well, in 2019, and it was, I think, the week right before Thanksgiving. And by waiting until after the presidential election this year, nobody knows who's going to get elected, what the country's going to reaction is going to be, what the debt market's reaction is going to be. And so I like in some of my conversations that I've had with him, just him saying, look, we could consider pulling the trigger on refinancing these bands prior to November, what is it, 3rd this year, so that we avoid the whatever might happen nationally and internationally after the presidential election here in this country this year. Jim.
No, that was my cat again. I apologize. I'm trying to get him out of here. So, sorry.
Well, leave him in. It's nice entertainment. That's one good thing about these Zoom meetings. We, you know, cats and kids and spouses and
lawnmowers, other such noise.
Lawnmowers. So that, you know, Matt went into the weeds a little bit with some of the cash flow and that, and in how I could explain it and summarize it is, with our mortgages, when we went to buy our houses, especially when we were younger, you got an option to do a fixed rate mortgage for 15 years, 30 years are the two typical ones, or a variable rate mortgage where the interest rate adjusts periodically. And typically that variable rate interest rate is initially lower than what you could get in the fixed market, but it can adjust. Whereas you get the fixed rate mortgage and your payment's locked in for that 15 or 30 years, and you know exactly what it's going to be. And it's kind of the same decision for the city. Do we want to stay with the one-year bans? And yeah, the current interest rate environment for short-term bans is super favorable, but will that last forever? Or do we lock in the 2% or less than 2% current for a long-term ban or bond, and then know, okay, now we know it's not going anywhere for the next 20 years, or Matt threw out maybe there's some type of hybrid option. And so I'm comfortable asking council for the flexibility to introduce both pieces of legislation in July, passing both in August. It's I don't know when the August council meeting is, whatever the second Tuesday is. That'll be right before our window when we could maybe start looking at seriously selling them if the market is very competitive right then, and give the city the flexibility. Obviously, we can't do both. It's not like you're giving us legislation to buy two pieces of equipment and we could feasibly go out and buy both. This one, we have to exercise one or the other. So there's really no risk in council. We can't borrow $17 million in bonds and then also borrow $17 million in bands because you gave us the flexibility to do both. It's not feasible or practical. We would have to do one or the other. So I'm comfortable advocating and asking council if they have that comfort level, put it on first reading in July. If we need another meeting in between July and August, we do so. We maybe update where the market is, both on the short-term market and the long-term market. We adopt both pieces in the August council meeting, and then we exercise one of the options at the right time based on the market conditions that exist, and communicating all that with council. I've tried to be very transparent and open with council since arriving here in November, and there's no reason for me to deviate from that MO regarding this. This is a major decision. It's over half of the city's debt right now. So we want to make the best decision we can for the city.
Mr. Vice Mayor?
Yes, Jim.
A quick question just to Matt out of curiosity. This is tangentially related. What do you think the issuance of all the new federal debt, I mean, probably they've gone into debt another $3 to $4 trillion this year for the coronavirus, and they're looking to go into debt even more on the national debt side. What does that have on the markets? Does that have any bearing on what we're talking about?
It does. And
great question. I'm glad I want to hear the answer.
Yeah, so I'll give you my personal opinion because I have no better insight than every other economist, and I'm not an economist. But the reality being that while we may enjoy the benefits of low interest rates today, because the Fed obviously is going to manage those low interest rates, the magnitude of the debt that has been issued to fund all this, there's a price to be paid at some point in time. And what my concern is that the price to be paid is going to come in higher interest rates later. So we might enjoy the benefit of these low rates for the next couple of years, and that would favor these short-term rates. But when the when the caps come off and yield curve control comes off, look, it's not going to be anytime soon. The economy's going to be in a recovery mode for a long time. But it's not going to be 20 years worth of recovery. And we'll just say the ability to lock in low long-term interest rates now look fantastic 5 years from now, where rates do start to ratchet up on the back end of the curve. You know, out beyond 10 years and 15 years and 20 years, you're going to have to see the Treasury yield curve go higher because there are going to be more supply than there likely is demand for the magnitude of debt. Unless the Federal Reserve comes in and puts some type of yield control in place that limits those Treasury. But even then, people see through that Treasury and they start to say, you know, money's limited, yields on tax-exempt beauties, we want something more. We know that even though the Federal Reserve is putting a cap on Treasuries, we want more. And that irrespective of what happens with Treasury bills, the muni market may disconnect, which it often does, from where Treasuries are. And that just happened as recently as 2 months ago, where the Treasury started at lower rates, but munis didn't follow, and munis were disconnected altogether, where some people weren't even buying munis. And my concerns about munis go deeper into your question as it relates to the impact on local governments and their wherewithal to repay their debt because of disruption in their revenue stream. So there could be, we'll call it, a bifurcation that only the strong credits get done, and strong, who knows where they draw the line of the strongest credits. And the weaker credits come at a much higher price. I hope that answers your question, but the likelihood of higher interest rates in the future is still a strong probability.
That does answer the question. And I guess that also influences a little bit of my thinking on you know, the flexibility part of it, because I just have a hunch that we're in for some pretty high interest rates coming in the next several years.
Yeah, there's certainly no economist, but some people that I respect in the financial field and economics field are just beside themselves at the magnitude of national debt and saying that it's been a house of cards at the national level for the last decade, and now it's ratcheted up even more, and they're just waiting for the whole system to implode. And personally, they're putting a lot of their investments into gold because they just see that they think the whole U.S. financial system is being propped up by fiat money. Is that the term? And there's not enough to back it, and they think they're going to profit when all of this comes tumbling down. Whether that happens or not, I don't know, but I like what Matt's comments were, and Councilman Tregus, I tend to agree that there's a price to be paid for everything, and these current low rates that we're enjoying in the short term will have some cost in the long term.
Dave, I had a couple of questions, observations. So, you know, I'm an avid reader of the CAFR. Debbie, could you let me share my screen for a minute?
Sure. You should be.
So, basically, I looked at the CAFR, and the CAFR shows roughly $33 million of total bonds and notes payable outstanding. I've got some 2018. My information is dated, but I could just share this with you to help me understand. So, hopefully you're seeing this sort of summary schedule of notes and bonds payable from 2009 to 2018, and you know, the total balance outstanding according to the CAFR, and we've been running around $30 million outstanding for a long time now. But what the CAFR shows us is 8 or 10 different borrowings for specific purposes. And I've heard the number 17 million throughout this conversation, but how do I bridge that 17 million to the roughly 30 million of the city's total debt? Like, what were the purposes of each one of those borrowing? I presume, Vern, you're tracking them separately, but help me understand the 17 million versus the total 30 whatever million of city debt.
I think with Matt's assistant, the Northeast Quadrant TIF are short-term bonds, so that $3.7 million is a short-term. That figure. The Northeast Quadrant are also the short-term. So that one. The Rexford Woods Sanitary, that's a special assessment. So that's a bond, or is that in the...
That's a bond.
That's a bond. Selig, we don't really have...
Selig is a note.
Selig is a note. Okay, that's 1.863, so you could highlight that one in yellow. The $151,000, I think that's an OPWC, so I don't think that is part of any TIF. Let's see, Pleasant Valley Widening, $3.6 million.
I think that is a...
That is also an OPWC.
Okay.
So that's out. Northwest Quadrant, that is a bond, so that's not included.
Right.
And Southwest Quadrant is also a bond now, a bond, so not a band. So it's 10.8 roughly, and then somehow with your category, the various refunding,
that's probably notes.
Is not all, well, maybe at 18, those were all notes, because then between 18 and 19, some of that principal was paid off.
Yeah, so I would tell you what's not showing there in terms of 2018 is the additional note you issued in 19, which was
almost. Yeah, like I say, my information here is obviously a little dated, but I'm just trying to get my head around the $17 million versus the total $33 million. And then, so, correct me if I'm wrong, but would it make sense for each, you know, certainly these, the TIF ones, perfect world, we would forecast out over the full life of the TIF, which is a limited number of years, you know, how much we're going to collect. Is that enough to satisfy those bonds? You know, it's just a matter of time to pay those off. And have you done that forecasting? I mean, is there a belief that we're going to run out of time on the TIF before the note obligation is satisfied? What's the relationship between time and the balance on these TIF borrowings? You're muted, Matt.
There we go.
Okay, sorry about that. So that goes back to the analysis I alluded to, where we have a little over $2 million in TIF revenue. You're right. I don't think we've drilled down to when each TIF started and when each TIF burns off, but we looked at the TIF revenue, and we feel, I believe, fairly confident that the TIF revenue from 2020 to 2030, which is when the existing debt service that's outstanding in the form of bonds is paid off. And as I mentioned, that's roughly $950,000. And we have $2 million worth of TIF revenue coming in for the next 10 years to pay off the existing bonds. And that's part of what you see in your in column 2018. What I mentioned then, what is above and beyond that, is available to pay off the $17 million of outstanding bands that were intended to be repaid with TIF revenues.
Okay, again, you guys are the managers. Just my observation is that, for instance, with these TIFs, we have to go to the county every year and assert the need for the TIF for the county to continue the TIF. And having this debt makes it a pretty easy fact to present to the Budget Commission to say, we got this debt, so we need to continue to collect the TIF. And, as long as the TIF is there to satisfy that obligation and there's plenty of time, there's not a huge incentive to pay those off any quicker, because then we just might lose the TIF revenue. It would just go away. Assuming that, you know, there's enough time left on the TIF, and the annual collections are going to be enough to satisfy that debt, significantly more. But just again, my opinion is that there ought to be some matching between the time left on the TIF and the amortization of those particular borrowings.
So I think only one point of clarification, the TIF does not have to be used just to be repaid. Payback debt. The TIF and each one of those TIF district has a public purpose improvement clause at the end of each TIF section that identifies what those TIFs can be used for, and they can be used in a current basis for current capital projects as long as they qualify under that list of public purpose improvement. It does not have to be necessarily just for the debt associated with a specific project that was identified whatever, 10 years or so ago. As long as the public purpose improvement provides you the latitude, you can use current TIF for those on a cash basis. Well, on a pay-as-you-go basis.
And that's current. The sector.
Does there exist a forecast for each one of those TIFs that kind of shows an estimated revenue? This is how much we have to use to repay debt. This is how much additional shortfall or surplus there is over the remaining life of the TIF.
I don't believe there's such a reconciliation of that nature. There's a historical list of each TIF and the TIF collections from each of those TIF, but there's no, we'll call it, allocation of each TIF against debt service and public purpose improvement. That's never been done.
And here's why I haven't done that, Councilor Sinek, is because even though it's been sold to council that it's a good thing that we were dedicating TIF revenue to pay back these bands with, and in some of the bonds that the city has, these still are general obligation bands and general obligation notes. These are not just revenue bonds where the city is only pledging TIF revenue to pay these back. If we were, we would be paying interest rates a lot higher than what we've been getting in the past and what we would be getting the next time we go to market. We get good interest rates because we have pledged the full faith and credit of the city to pay these bands and bonds back with. So when I'm calculating, I just look at it on a more macro level. Matt will drill down like, okay, your TIF revenue is $2.1 million, your bond debt service is this, your band debt service is this. I look at the macro level and say like you do, you pointed out in the past, look, net revenues of the city minus the HIDA and strike force is significant, and the operating budget is 24 million of that, say, let's just round it. So that gives us multiple million, 16 million, throw whatever number you want in there as a gap to do debt service and capital and infrastructure. And so if that gap is 16 million, let's say, and our debt service is 2 to 3 million a year on that, I still have multiple millions to apply to capital and infrastructure. And so I'm looking at it more on an aggregate basis, knowing that TIF revenue was sold as the way to pay these bonds and bands back, but we also have every other revenue source available to us to pay these back. And if we only need the TIF, great. But we get good interest rates because we sell them to the market as general obligation debt and not just TIF revenue debt.
And again, I just reiterate that it's easy to have the county approve the TIF while we have the separate debt out there. It's just an easy fact to present to them to say, hey, keep renewing our TIF. But it'd be very important to know whether we should amortize these over 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, kind of based on the life of the TIF, the balance of the loan, the future estimated cash flows from that, you know, tax collections, property tax collections from the TIF. Are we over, under, or, you know, where are we at? Where are we at in each one of these things? And having that sort of information would better inform my thinking about how to settle up these bonds, what we should do, kind of knowing what that TIF is. Because again, we only get the TIF revenue to the extent we can justify a need for the revenue. If there were no debt, we might not get the TIF. So we might as well keep the debt around to maximize the revenue that's coming from the TIF.
I would call attention to the fact, though, besides the debt we owe to others, we have the debt we owe to ourselves. Each one of these TIF funds have been advanced millions of dollars, and that number is 18, 19, 20 million dollars. And so once we go to the county, if our cash flow is great and we've paid all this debt back in 5 years, county can't cut us off and say no more need for the TIF, because we say, hey, we paid the debt off, we paid the others, now we have to pay all the advances back that we paid ourselves back. So we have a lot of justification for the TIFs, and I don't anticipate them running out. And let's say we were so good financially that we paid all our debt to others off and we paid ourselves back. By that time, all these TIF districts, the infrastructure is already 15, 20 years old. Guess what? We got to start doing multi-million dollar repairs after these roads have been and these sewers have been in place for that long. So I think it's more a theoretical discussion about us wanting to maybe keep the debt out there so that the county doesn't ever cut the TIF off. Between what we owe others, what we owe ourselves, and the needs within each one of these districts, as Matt outlined, I could see us, as long as a TIF district is in place, we could justify its existence.
Okay. And the other comment I'd like to make with these different notes or debt is that it makes perfect sense to amortize the debt over the useful life of the asset. I mean, if we have to totally rip up and replace Selig Road next year, yet we still have debt from the original construction, that would not be a good thing. You know, if we can amortize the loan over the life of the asset, that's a fine way to go. And you know, these, the Northeast Quadrant TIF, the Quadrant Improvements, the Selig Drive, those are fairly new investments. So we're early in the life of those assets, and if they take longer term to pay off, that's good. It matches the period of the benefit against the period of the amortization. This bigger nut down here of the 9.8 million, that's personally, editorially, a little more troubling to me, because if you look back, that kind of came into being in 2011 when these 2010 loans were refinanced, part of which is the shared use facility, which is been around a while, getting along with the tooth, and we're carrying a pretty big debt for that asset that maybe, you know, I'd be looking to pay that down faster, sooner, get done with that, on top of the fact that's not, there's no, to the best of my knowledge, no TIF associated with this various refunding obligation. There's no dedicated revenue source other than general city receipts. So I'd be looking to pay that one down quicker and let these guys go over the life of the asset. Again, I don't know how, that's a more granular thing than what we've been talking about so far. We've kind of talked grand totals on the whole thing, but have you done much analysis on the individual items of debt that we have?
Yeah, I think Matt or Dave or Maggie are all primed to talk a response on that. So
we have no choice when we issue bonds. We have to stay. It'll be done by purpose, and the purpose meaning the projects. That there's a fiscal officer certificate when these bonds are originally issued, and it outlines the useful life of each of those projects. When you compile these different projects together in one offering, you still have the limitation for each project of not exceeding the useful life that was identified when it was originally issued. So even though you might be consolidating six or seven projects in one bond issue, you still have to structure each component within the useful life originally identified. So in fact, Selig Drive, for example, was intended to be paid as currently outstanding at the end of, I think, 19 was $1,525,000. It was anticipated that $325,000 would be paid off in this year, and that would bring it down. So as this was, we'll call it cash flowed years ago, it was intended to be paid back in 4 years, 4 to 5 years, in the course of issuing bonds. In the course of issuing bonds, it would be paid back in a similar manner. You wouldn't be extending Selig. You would be structuring a bond and wrapping these all together with separate amortization schedules for each project. so as to do just what, avoid just what you're describing. You don't want to issue CELIC Drive, what remains of CELIC Drive, in the structure of a 20-year bond issue, and have to pay that off when it's been outstanding for 10 years. So you're trying to make sure that each component within the bond issue has lives by the original, we'll call it fiscal officer certificate and useful life that was identified when the project was started. So we have to compile all those pieces together and put together a bond structure that complies. That's state law. We don't have any choice but to do it with those limitations.
The key part of that was the, on Councilman Sinek, your one line showed shared use facility, $11 million of debt there back in 2011. That was the bond that was defeased. So council in the last couple of years actually did what you just advocated we do. They paid off that debt that had no repayment source. And so they're sitting out there, I think, defeased, but not technically paid off because it's within the 10-year
call feature.
But the bottom line is the debt is not on our books anymore because they've been defeased for the reason you bring up, that the previous finance director felt that there was no dedicated revenue repayment source for those versus the TIF. So I believe that's what council did. And they actually did what you're advocating for now.
And that was done in 2019. So the challenge to the spreadsheet that you're showing in the CAFR is you can't drill down in what's called refunding. And those are likely the notes that are being rolled every year. They call them refunding, but technically those are notes that are just being renewed each year. But separately, in 2019, there was in fact the cash defeasance of some of that outstanding debt. So it's a little confusing in terms of that. So that graphic that you have in the spreadsheet.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, it's dated. 2018 is the most recent CAFR I got available. And, you know, it might be good, Vern, if you could provide us with more up-to-date figures as to how much is outstanding on each obligation, what the interest rates are. And, again, it's hard to analyze and understand. We're just talking about one lump sum of $33 million, but if you could break it down into more manageable components, kind of like I ship on that schedule with, this is how much we owe for this project, this is how much we owe for that project. And, you know, some of those are zero interest rates. I mean, obviously, we would all borrow as much as we possibly could if interest were zero. You couldn't borrow enough if interest rates were zero. It's the interest cost that really is the, it's not the debt balance itself, it's the interest cost that is the penalty to the city for holding on too much money. And the other sort of challenge I heard to something I was mentioned earlier was a 20-year amortization. To me, just not nearly as close to the numbers as you are, Vern, or Mayor, or others have been around here longer, but that's too long, in my opinion. We're going to have such positive cash flow from the operations that we're going to build a big cash balance that we don't need while we're carrying the same debt. So I would advocate that we make some attempt to, at a longer-term cash flow forecast to say is 20 years. You know, if we had $10 million of excess cash, wouldn't we use that to pay down debt sooner? And it's possible we're heading toward that. Does a 20-year amortization, you know, could it be too long? We don't want to sit on cash. In fact, markets are awash in cash. And just wondering, is 20 years too long?
Well, the 20-year, just to clarify from my perspective, 20 years is a term period that you lock in, you know what you're going to pay every year, it's fixed, and if you can get a sub 2% interest rate, I'm like you, it's like almost free money. The other component of that is we have a very high appetite, a large appetite for spending, and there's, $40-50 million of infrastructure projects that are forecasted. There's a number of different capital projects that we're never going to have enough cash to run the size of this organization. And the other side of that coin, if you flip it over nowadays, is I'm not so sure what's the new normal is going to be when the dust settles out in terms of the demand for office space and our current structure of our economic development strategy. So we're wrestling with that on a daily basis right now. And as it becomes more clear, we will not only sit with council, we will discuss with council, and then we'll project with council. So there are a number of different variables that are just so off the wall right now, but we've got tens of millions of dollars of projects that they could be shelf already quickly.
I guess I'm just trying to suggest here is that we should think about the maturity, the term of these notes kind of by project as opposed to a lump sum, a little more granular. Try to match, for those that are supported by TIF revenue, to try to match the maturity of the debt over the life of the TIF, certainly no longer than that, perhaps even shorter, depending on what the forecast may show. And then for other, call it general debt that doesn't have a TIF, consider is 20 years too long of a period. Could we pay it off sooner, thereby eliminating the interest cost, which again, maybe the interest cost becomes so nominal at that point, okay, we go over 20 years, but a 10-year maturity, it's got to be half the interest or more than a 20-year maturity. So given that it's the interest cost that is the penalty in this, and that we could get it paid off over 10 years and be comfortable, that's fine. There will always be projects that we'll need to borrow for. No trouble with that. And you can't save up and enough cash to pay for a 30-year life asset. You've never actually purchased the asset. You have to finance it with debt. That's fine. But new projects come along, and there'll be an economic life and a revenue source with many of those. So, problem with that. It's just the debt we have today, I'm just challenging the assumption that 20 years is the right period. I just ask the question, should we consider shorter than 20 years?
I guess my only point would be that if I can lock in, again, I'll go back to a business perspective, if I can lock in 20 years of debt or financing for less than 2%, and in 5 years, if we're sitting on some cash and we have a $10 or $20 million project to finance, and we can end up financing at 4 or 5%, even tax free. Then we've made a good calculation. If in fact interest rates are such that in 5 or 10 years that they're still at sub 2% on bands, then at least I know what my debt structure is, and I know what I'm paying off, and then I have flexibility as these projects come on board down the road. It's just philosophical as much as anything.
Yeah.
And Mayor, if you don't mind my adding, on a 20-year bond issue, generally speaking these days, we would build in an optional redemption provision, somewhere between 7 and 8 years, that gives the city the flexibility after that call date or optional redemption date to pay down bonds that are farther out on the maturity schedule. So if you did have some flexibility in the form of excess revenue, you can apply that to bonds that are out in 2000, out of the amorts that are 16 and thereafter, to shorten the maturity of the debt.
That's true, but as long as it's in financial structuring of debt where the financial institution or the wants the leverage for that, and they don't want I want the leverage for that. So
that's your decision. That's not a put feature. That's an optional redemption feature that the city controls. It really is your luxury and your benefit to make that decision. It's not the financial institutions. It's not a put by them. Right. It's an optional redemption to you. So I don't mean to challenge you, but that is a luxury that you enjoy, not the financial.
I've been on both sides of that one where.
Right. I get in the private sector. It's
right. In the private sector, I've been on both sides of that.
Right. But I don't blame you. I mean, again, that's an analysis you do at the time when you have cash to determine whether or not that cash is better served paying off debt at 2% or possibly reinvesting at something north of 2%, depending on the marketplace at the time.
Yeah, you have built in some flexibility is what you're saying, Matt.
Right. And in 2019, when the city did the fees, $4 million worth of debt, those bonds were outstanding at 4+%. That looks like a brilliant decision today where you can't earn 60 basis points on short-term investments. So you basically took cash and put aside 4% debt which looks like a very smart move of having paid that debt down last year.
So all we're looking is to maybe bring it home is that flexibility. I know Councilperson Capusta, you indicated you'd like that dual option to give us some flexibility. Councilman Trinkus, you've indicated that you think long-term rates are going to pop up at some point, indicating maybe a preference for going the long-term route. Councilman Sinek, I agree 100% with your comment about matching the life of the asset to the debt term, and short-term assets borrow more short-term, long-term assets borrow more long-term. Would it be a safe assumption then that because all of the assets that we're borrowing for these bands are all infrastructure projects, those are long-term assets, but effectively we're borrowing them on one-year notes, that you would maybe be more of a proponent of bonding those out, maybe not for 20 years, but bonding them out because that's a long-term debt and it's matching better to a long-term asset than a one-year note is?
I would say that the way we're doing it now has the distinct advantage of getting the low short-term interest rates. We have ample cash reserves. If things got really bad, we could pay down to that debt, but no penalty. There's no prepayment penalty, or essentially 1 year. It's a very short horizon. So we have flexibility in that regard and have gotten a cost savings out of it. Again, I look at the debt as an important component to be able to justify the TIF. And so where there is TIF revenue that's going to pay the debt, it doesn't much matter to me whether it's long-term or short-term borrowing. Again, that TIF money, it's like free money. It's revenue that the city wouldn't collect but for the TIF. So if we get that and continue to pay down the debt, that's a beautiful solution. I can't say that I have a strong opinion one way or the other whether that should be long-term fixed rate or short-term, year-to-year rollover. Everybody's been thinking interest rates are going to go up for the last 10 years. They can't go much lower. Sure enough, they're approaching zero, and some people talk about having negative interest rates. So who knows? But keep an eye on that time. Nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. There's always the time factor that we have to work with.
And Councilman Viverka is the third member of the Finance Committee. Any opinion at this point, or you need more information, or can you give us some direction? Because I know, Debbie, you're on the line, and I'm ready for your email any day where you're saying, hey, the deadline for July legislation's coming up, and so we would like to give the law people the heads up and get them started, because it could be some fairly complicated legislation. So if we do intend to get it on the July agenda, getting started on that sooner rather than later would be advantageous.
Aiming that towards me now.
If you want.
Okay, well, you ended up going Debbie's direction. I think we've been particularly successful with working with the bands up to this point, and there does seem to be an advantage of having run the bands as compared to the bonds, because the rates tend to have been better. So I'm not real anxious to jump into a bunch of bonds at this particular point yet. We do have a chance to see what the tendency tends to be.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, last part, we have a what, to see the tendency of what?
To see what if the tendency switches. I mean, as Ken said, they've been saying for years that how can we go any lower with the rates, and it has been. So it doesn't seem to be any big push in my mind's eye to flip over and jump out of bands and jump totally into bonds. I mean, continuing to look at it seems to make sense to me.
Sure, okay. Just trying to get a sense if we we put both options on the table in July. Obviously, that's just first reading. There's no vote on it, so hopefully that wouldn't be an issue. And then we would talk about it more between July and August, keep monitoring the municipal bond market and BN market, update you more, and see if in August we're ready to make a decision on one or the other, or for the ultimate flexibility, still going down that two-lane path, so that if the bond market, municipal bond market and BN market is still in any level of turmoil come later this summer, that we do have the flexibility to make the best decision for the city. So I guess at least on the first step is the five members that are on here, Councilperson Narduzzi, Councilperson Welchana, which are not, just to see at least if the five, if they're amenable to first reading on both bans and bonds in July for step one. And then we'll cross step two in August when we get closer to that.
I would be in favor of that.
I would as well.
Okay.
Again, I would reiterate, Mr. Finance Director, if you could provide us with a forecast for each one of these TIF districts as to how they're expected to factor out. You know, this is the revenue, this is the bonds, this is the shortfall or the excess that's estimated to be derived from each one of these TIF districts. Kind of knowing where we're at on that is an important factor. And it's hard for me to if we were running, you know, huge surpluses in a TIF district or a huge deficit in a TIF district, knowing that would shape my decision making on whether to go short term or long term fixed. And I just don't have that information right now to make an informed decision about what to do with the debt with respect to each individual TIF district. Does that make sense?
Sure, it makes sense, and I'll try to obtain that information. I know I have to get working on the five-year capital plan, because that's kind of out of whack in my opinion, where the next couple of years we're showing millions of dollars more of projects on the books than we have the ability to fund internally. So there's a big project in that, but I could try to get you that, but also always know that these are either bans or bonds. These are general obligation debt, and TIF revenue at $2 million a year is a small fraction of the 30-some million dollars in income tax that is also pledged to repay these. So I always steer back to that I'm not so hung up as Matt presents and as the previous finance director was, that, hey, I'm just looking at the TIF debt, making sure the TIF debt supports this. I just say, look, we got $30, $40 million in revenue to pay these debt back with, and I'm looking at it on a macro basis versus the micro basis, but we could try to put something together for you, sure.
Thank you.
But we will need some form of a legislation passed, bans or bonds, one way or another.
In July or by December
30th? No. Present it to City Council so that you have at least time to review it and think about passing something in August. So I think what we're trying to do is just set the table for giving both the maximum flexibility to City Council to proceed with one path or another at their August meeting.
So to summarize, I think what we are going to do is going to have two pieces of legislation, one promoting the bans, one promoting the bonds. And again, with your expertise, you're going to provide council with some more data. If I could say changes, as we looked at some of the data from February, March to now, how so many things have changed. So between the legislation coming on in July and even the August meeting and maybe beyond, before the September meeting, we're going to continue to monitor the situation, see what is in the best interest of the city. I think the mayor mentioned if we get long-term bond interest rates at 2% or less than 2%, forward-looking, looking over the next 10, 20 years, and maybe 3, 4 years from now, the bond interest rate, who knows, could be you know, even 3%, 4%, it'd be a brilliant move to get that locked in at the low rates it is now. So I think what we're going to do right now is, for flexibility, there would be two pieces of legislation on first reading in the July meeting. Again, we're going to probably have at least one more finance meeting, if not two, that'll continue to monitor. Matt, if we can, you can provide us information as it becomes available, especially for all us council members, so we can make the most informed decision. But right now, looking at the statistics, things have changed. You know, for the two, like Matt had mentioned in his presentation, how bonds have, you know, had, wherever you back in February, lower, if I'm correct. They went up a little bit higher there in March or April. Now they've gone back a little bit lower. So things change rapidly. And again, when we're talking, you know, a few percentage points over long term, if it gets down to 2 or 1.91 point for long term, it makes sense to lock that in. This way, we know exactly what our obligations are for the next couple decades. And it might not ever be that. Well, it might, the bands might look very attractive now, extremely attractive, but a year from now, or even a couple years from now, the opportunity we have to lock in that interest rate might be, you know, fleeting, and that. So, but again, it's a thing that we're going to give our have the two options available for us, and we're going to keep it, those two options available for the longest time period until we finally towards the, well, either the August meeting or maybe if it needs to be later, we have it. Special meeting, if depending on what the world events are. So flexibility is the key, I think, to our way of looking at this issue. Any other questions from council? So this way, again, I think Ken calls for more information. I guess we can provide you gentlemen, if you can provide us with again a little more information on things and arguments, and that the better that we can make our decision based on. And likewise, Mayor, to your feelings too on the topic. Good. Yeah, thanks, everybody. This was helpful.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Either for Matt or for Vern, and that's the approach we'll take. And again, I know that my committee and especially all the members of council would like to have as much information as possible. So Vern, that's the key, that if you can provide us, and Matt too, on this, because it's not an easy area to understand, and the more that we can be given to make it understandable, I think we have more up-to-date information on the TIF revenue and projection of that. And I think that maybe you could provide, you know, a table or two that'll provide how much revenue we're getting from it, what our obligations are, and that what money is available after we meet those obligations. So that might make it a little easier, Ken, for you to understand the TIF revenue and how it's being utilized. Any other things, gentlemen?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So, council, expect that you're going to see two pieces of legislation. Not to be confused, we're trying to take the global view and keep our mind open to how things change down the road, and then we'll have a better idea come August. And if we're able to jump on a low, you know, rate for bonds early September, I think it'd be the prudent way to go. If we can get something at 1.7, 1.8, something like that, and lock that in for 2020, it would be almost a no-brainer at that point. But we'll have to see. Again, the market changes rapidly. Anything else, Mayor?
No, I'm fine. I appreciate the dialogue, and I always walk away with more knowledge. So thank you, everyone.
You're good. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, Mayor, just ask you a quick question. So next Tuesday, we have an Economic Development Committee meeting, and one of the things I think would be a good discussion at that point would be sort of an update on the IRG Northwest Quadrant thing. Is that something, will you be present at that meeting, or will Jessica be in a position to speak on that subject?
Well, both of us will be at the meeting.
Okay.
We have not heard from them since I had a meeting with them before COVID. And
I'm not asking you to get into it now. I'm just wondering if that's something we could put on the agenda. Should we put something on the agenda for next week's meeting on that or not?
Let me reach out, and if there's something that's relevant or pertinent or time sensitive, absolutely.
Okay.
If it's in a pause mode, then it's not relevant at the time. But yeah, we'll reach out to them, at least see if there's anything shaking there.
Okay.
And Mayor, is there anything on the St. Michael's? Would that be on the topic for next Tuesday, or do you want to hold back?
You know, that's going. What we're going to do is we're going to meet with the stakeholders, the proximate in the area, and there's some history that needs to be vetted. The neighbors have introduced some information. So my goal is to meet with the neighbors, St. Michael's, and obviously the city, and have Jessica get her arms around the situation so that we'd be in a better position to, if that happens between now and Tuesday, we'll be in a position to discuss it more fully. If it doesn't happen, then it will in the near future.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor.
Mayor, I have a question.
Yeah.
If I may, Dave?
Yes, Kathleen, go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to know, Vernon, I don't know if you have this information now or if it's something we could find out, but as I continue to read the articles that come forward regarding the municipal tax and possibility of employees wanting to pay tax where they are living, working versus like in our their buildings might be, I keep seeing that figure of that this would, if I'm understanding correctly, this would be an issue for consideration in businesses whose annual sales were at least $500,000 or above. Is that accurate?
That's probably more of a tax question. I don't know if Councilman Sinek knows that off the top of his head, what that's referring to, or if we would have to do some research on that.
That's my understanding, it's over $500,000
for businesses.
Okay, so that's what I've been reading. So my next question then for that is, could we try to get a handle on what percentage of our businesses in town would be impacted by that then?
How do you do that?
$500,000
in sales, or sales revenue, I think is.
I don't know if that's the information the Regional Income Tax Agency would share with us. I know they obviously share tax information with us, but whether they share annual revenues of the company, since those are private companies, I'm not sure Rita's at liberty to legally share that. I guess I would have to ask Rita that.
Yeah, I would be interested, because if that's going to be the barometer that they use potentially to make this decision, then I don't know that it's very fair not to get us that information, that they would share that information with us ahead of time, because that could be a significant impact to us, as we all know. So
it'd be an impact. I'm not sure it would be significant. If you think about a business with $500,000 of revenue, maybe they have $400,000 of payroll, maybe, probably less than that, but $400,000 of payroll equates to $8,000 of city income tax withholding. So you got to have an awful lot of $500,000 businesses with 80% payroll.
Right, and that's what I want to know, because I agree with you. It could be insignificant, or it could, you know, I didn't know how.
It'd be a rounding difference in our budget still. Those micro businesses, they tend not to have payroll. Maybe they function, you know, there's some net profit income that they would pay. But that's, $500,000 is a very small business. If you're going to rent space on Rockside Road, you probably have revenue quite a bit higher than $500,000. Unless you're in one of those sort of shared office where you're maybe just a solo insurance agent or a lawyer or accountant, you know, kind of sharing office space. But by and large, the tenants down on Rockside are significantly larger than $500,000 of revenue. And that's where the
I don't know, Mayor, if you want to share just real quick, you shared with us about your intent maybe to talk to Columbus a little bit more seriously about this issue, so that communities like the outering suburbs, such as Independence, and even downtown business districts like Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, how they would be impacted, and trying to take some action now to prevent a negative occurrence from occurring going forward.
Yeah, we discussed a little earlier some of the dynamics that are taking place relative to Columbus and all the taxpayers about what's going to happen, the new normal after this thing settles out. We need to have the legislature probably redress some type of income tax situation that continues the 20-day provision for construction projects. But there's going to have to be a revisit or a new look in terms of the office mix and people working from home. And so, and the impact on these tax, all these different communities. So we're talking to a number of people to try to get our arms around it and be proactive in terms of income tax and stabilizing that number for these affected communities. But that's a to-be-continued discussion. Hopefully that answers your question, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I guess we will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Well, thank you everyone for your participation and for your attendance. And again, be prepared to continue to get information from our finance director, from Matt, and our finance department. And look forward to having two pieces of legislation on the July agenda with parallel bans and bonds, so we keep our options open.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Members of council. Thank you, finance committee. Thank you, finance director.
Playground opened today and the outdoor pool opened yesterday, so it finally started to feel like summer around here.
Yes. Walk around the park, you see it starting to be shiny again.